previously on the Kunstler Cast.
There's probably no project that would have a greater effect on our oil use right away than fixing the passenger railroad system in America.
The disassembly of the organs of civic life and then the consequent isolation of them. Suburban sprawl is a living arrangement with no future. It's not about running out of oil. It's about how the various systems that we depend on for everyday life are going to get into trouble just as we go over the peak.
You're listening to the Kunstler Cast, a weekly conversation about the tragic comedy of suburban sprawl, featuring James Howard Kunstler, author of The Geography of Nowhere, The Long Emergency, and World Made by Hand. I'm Duncan Crary, and I want to thank all of those of you who nominated our program for a 2008 podcast award. We are a finalist in the cultural/arts category, and you can vote for the Kunstler Cast once a day until November 6. Thank you for your support. Today's another Table Scraps program. I am not up in the Kunstler Cave. I'm going to be playing segments of conversations I had with Jim in the past that didn't make it to the show. And the second one I'll be playing is about Jim's political beliefs. I thought that would be timely with the U.S. election impending. The first one we're going to hear is a listener call that I got Jim to respond to. So let's just get right into it.
Hello, my name is Will. I'm calling from Sherburne, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. I'm wondering if you can give some thought on the people who are attending your seminars or your discussions or tuning into your podcast. I suspect you have they make some odd bedfellows. You probably have some of the doomsayers, the evangelicals, the Christian right, pro-gun, you know, buy gold, move to the mountains and secure up against, the black helicopters. And then on the other end, you probably have, the environmentalist movement, more traditionally liberal-type people. And I'm wondering, if they're finding common ground in peak oil and how that's playing out as, in your caller and in followers and how it's all shaken out. I'm just curious. And anyway, I really enjoy your podcast, and I wish you would do it more and maybe make it a half an hour long, because I really appreciate everything that you're bringing to the table, and I'm trying to spread the word of the podcast. Thanks a lot.
So, Jim, what kinds of people are out there attending your lectures and listening to this podcast? What are they all about?
The podcast I can't really answer for because I literally don't see them, but I go around and I do the university lectures and stuff. Actually, I generally have three different types of audiences. About half of my trips are university lectures, and I think one can easily imagine what kind of audience it is. It tends to be pretty broad. They're young people, may have a political point of view and even a strong one, but they're not necessarily people who have completely formed a coherent view of the world, you know, whatever their impulses and beliefs are at the moment. They're people who are open to some degree, I think, to all kinds of viewpoints. And that's one of the reasons that we have university programs that, that expose them to different points of view. Another quarter of my audiences are professional groups. I'm still doing a lot of stuff with the various town planning issues with the American Institute of Architects and planners. You know, both of these organizations have chapters in every state of the union, and in some cities have their own chapters. Mm-hmm. So I talk to them about their urban design issues. And then another quarter of the groups are either local civic groups or local political groups that are trying to either get some kind of a post-oil viewpoint together or trying to get a better outcome in their town design or their counties.
Now, you get a lot of email, Jim, and I assume you're getting more viewpoints via email. What about the doomers that the caller mentioned? Do you know that term, the doomers?
Well, sure. I run into my share of doomers. I personally don't consider myself a doomer. I consider myself a pretty cheerful person who has a view that we're entering very different times. But the world is continually changing and cultures are continually transforming themselves. And this is just a normal part of history and the human experience. So I don't consider my position to be especially apocalyptic. And it's, you know, I don't represent the end of the world. And I would want to be very clear about that. And I try to be in my blabs.
Yeah. I cruise the internet sometimes, have a Google alert for the ConcertCast. So whenever it's mentioned on someone's blog, I can go check it out. And I've noticed there are evangelical Christians listening to the show and digging on some of the stuff you're saying. And of course, there's a lot of environmental blogs like Tree Hugger that pick up a lot of what you're talking about. So it does seem like you do have quite a diverse following.
Let's put it this way. I don't consider myself to be a doomer. I don't consider myself to be a futurist. I consider myself to be an actualist. I'm interested in what is actually happening in the world. And what's actually happening in our world is that our politics is changing. We're being challenged by very real new circumstances to our industrial civilization. And we got to get hip and pay attention to it and do the right thing.
Well, that's it for part one of the show. I should add that the Columbia Journalism Review recently critiqued the ConcertCast, and the writer spoke to a listener and a DJ who plays this program on the traditional airwaves, so that gives you an even broader picture of who's out there digging on what Jim has to say. I linked to that piece from the main page of ConcertCast.com, so definitely check it out. In the second half, I'm going to play you a conversation I had with Jim about his political beliefs. And I did record this a few months ago, so it's possible that some things have changed with Jim, probably not. And I should let you know that I will definitely be talking to Jim about what will soon be the recent U.S. presidential election. I'm sure he'll have lots to say about that. But this is kind of cool in anticipation of November 4, so let's roll. So let me ask you, Jim, I want to ask you about your political beliefs. You have referred to being a dissatisfied registered Democrat.
Yeah, so I'm sort of a mainstream, you know, a mainstream 60s Democrat.
So what does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that I believe in social justice and equality. It means that I am not in favor of starting wars frivolously. It means that I have a healthy respect for the depredations of big business and big money. I suppose that's broad enough.
Well, I'm curious. I would think you are also a conservative in a way, not in the Pat Robertson, you know, the way the term has recently come to be defined, but you are a conservative as far as resources go. And,
I'd say that I'm a conservative in the sense that I'm an anti-avant-gardist, you know?
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I don't truck with the cutting edge of my culture. You know, I think that they're mostly a fallacious cutting edge, and that they're not really taking us anywhere. The cutting edge of architecture, the cutting edge of art, I think, is largely nonsense in our time. And so, yeah, I'm very conservative in that sense.
Well, let me ask you this then, in a very simplistic way. The Republicans are supposed to be about small government. They're actually not right now, but they're supposed to be. And the Democrats are accused of being all in favor of big government. And I want to ask you your attitudes about government's role in fixing society.
These two roles that you're describing really coming out of an earlier part of our historical experience. In the 20th century, when you had these two opposed forces, big business with its factories and the trade unions with their armies, representing the armies of workers, and that there was some kind of a seesaw here that needed to be in balance, and that the political process was engineered to resolve those tensions. Those days are over, and there are different things going on now. Obviously, the Republican Party is not the party of small government anymore. It's become the government of runaway fiscal irresponsibility and reckless spending, and in a way that they used to accuse the Democrats of. And this started, by the way, with Ronald Reagan, who promised to reduce the size of government and ended up spending more money than anyone had before. So The Democratic side is maybe a little more problematical because they really have lost their base in trade unionism and all the broad numbers of voters and working people that used to comprise that base. They're just not there anymore. And instead, they have this kind of clamor of narrowly focused interest groups, you know, whether they're environmentalists or gay people or ethnic people of one kind or another. And I'm not sure that there's enough there to glue a real coherent political philosophy together with if it's just defending the various perks and interests of different groups.
Jim, I think I believe I have read you stating that the two political parties today, the modern-day Republicans and modern-day Democrats, seem to be becoming increasingly irrelevant in the way that, say, the Whig Party became irrelevant in the past. Am I on the right track?
Oh, here? Yeah. I think that's exactly what's happening. That, you know, in the 1850s, you had the Whigs running the country. And, you know, within like 18 months in the 1850s, they disappeared. And they vanished out of complete irrelevancy. And along comes, into that vacuum, along comes Abraham Lincoln and the Republican Party and Mr. Fremont, the famous explorer and general. And they form this Republican Party.
I'm a big William H. Seward fan, too, so I got to drop his name in there.
He was in the mix.
He did more than just buy Alaska.
Yeah, and he was the governor of New York, which was probably the richest state at the time, and he was an important figure. So, you know, a number of important figures at that point leave the remnants of the Whig Party behind and form a new party. And this new party, the Republican Party, is not against slavery per se, but what they begin to do is frame the argument in a coherent way, especially Lincoln, you know, bringing the power of his particular rhetoric to this task. He begins to frame some of the important issues so at least we know what we're talking about. And once we know what we're talking about, we head into a convulsion, and that's the Civil War. Largely because we did finally understand what we were talking about, which was that slavery had to go eventually. You know, eventually a resolution of this idea began to emerge from the murk of all this politics. And, you know, today we're in, history as the famous saying goes, doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And today... we are in a situation where we have a couple of parties that seem to be making themselves irrelevant, at least at this moment right now, you know, before the conventions have been held. We have two parties that are doing a very poor job of addressing our energy predicament and all that it implies about our ability to carry forward an industrial civilization. You know, these are issues that couldn't be more fundamental, and they're just not talking about it coherently. Now, I don't see a third party even on the horizon or the fringes right now that might step into the vacuum. But, you know, as I said, history doesn't repeat it itself. It rhymes. So maybe there will be no equivalent of a new party. Maybe we will just head into some kind of a convulsion, some kind of disorder. And out of that disorder, some kind of new realignment will occur. But this time we may actually have to enter the convulsion before that even begins to happen. Mm. And there's a chance that as we come out of it, it won't be necessarily on the national scale, but it could be a recognition that, in fact, our governance will have to devolve to a more local scale and that the important decisions in our lives will be made locally, not nationally. You know, one of the lessons of the current presidential campaign may be that we've reached a point where the national government simply can't address these things, that it has become an impotent and ineffective institution, for better or for worse. That seems to be where it may be at now.
Well, I do find it interesting that historically the Republican Party was invested in women's rights, prison reform, not just punishment, and was interested in ending slavery. I feel like the Republican Party did embody a lot of the social ideas that liberals have today, and it had a coherent, you know, attitude towards the economy and states' rights and government.
Well, look, you know, politics is in an eternal state of flux.
Yeah.
positions and platforms and ideas and ideals are constantly shifting from one part of the arena to the other part of the arena. We should expect that to be the normal case. And the important thing is to just be able to track it, to be able to know where these things are in the arena at any given time, and to be able to find a position for oneself that that makes sense.
Well, just to ramp up these thoughts, I can't help but feeling that the so-called conservatives and a lot of modern-day Republicans are just using gay rights issues and abortion issues just to distract everyone from other things going on, other corporate interests and whatnot.
Of course that's happening, but it's happening with the complete connivance of the voting public itself. You know, it's the voting public can't face the really important issues. The voting public can't face our energy predicament. The voting public can't face the obsolescence of suburbia. The voting public can't face our infrastructure problems, the problems we face with being able to get around the landscape by other means than cars. You know, the voting public doesn't want to deal with these things. The voting public is too heavily invested in a status quo that is just rapidly losing its value. And it's a terrible catastrophe for many individuals, you know, whose homes will lose value, who are going to lose their whatever wealth they have connected with that suburban investment, who are going to lose their jobs, who are going to lose their social status. You know, these are really traumatic things that we're now facing in this society. And there's going to be the impulse to just try to get back to where we were, you know, 2-3 years ago, to get back to a status quo that we were comfortable with and keep it running. And an awful lot of things are going to be working to prevent that from happening. And so the result is just a tremendous potential for political and social turmoil.
Hi, this is Karina from Germany, living in Eugene, Oregon right now. I just read the book The Long Emergency and also listened to the Künstlercast. I just wanted to let you know that I think that you should be on OPB, on public television, with David Brancaccio or Bill Moyer, and get your message out through the entire U.S. and the world to be listened to. I love James Hauptkünstler. He's so funny, and everyone wants to listen for him all the time, alone for his cuteness and because he's so funny in regards to the suburban sprawl and what he has to say. But above all, I believe the American people and the world deserves to know what he has to say, and we need to figure out solutions to all of that very soon. So why don't you get on TV then and get out there? Everybody needs to see you. Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. Don't forget to visit podcastawards.com to vote for the KunstlerCast in the cultural arts category once a day until November 6th. And don't forget to vote in the real election, too, if you're a U.S. citizen. You've been listening to the KunstlerCast featuring James Howard Kunstler. To leave a listener comment, call toll-free at 866-924-9499. Send email to letters@KunstlerCast.com. You can download episodes of this program, read transcripts, learn about our theme music, join our mailing list, and talk about the show with other listeners in our online forum at KunstlerCast.com. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening.